Hey everybody, and welcome to another edition of Writer Club Radio. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm Liam.
And this week, we watched Kamen Rider Ghost, episode 27.
You nailed it.
Animal Sentai Juojer, episode 10. And Kamen Rider Amazons, episode 2. Fucking great. I did it. I did it, everybody.
God, Jeff, he came to me before the podcast, and he was like, Liam, I need to read these out to you just to make sure I got them right. 27, 10,
Way
2.
Wait, just put me on blast, motherfucker.
This is Rider Club Radio. This is the realest podcast on the internet. Everything.
Fuck.
We tell
Seriously,
them everything.
He just pulled the curtain back for you guys. I hope you enjoyed that. Liam, why don't you tell us what happened in Ghost this week?
All right. So, yeah, let's get Ghost out of the way first. So this week, they go to the Ganma world. Takeru and Necrom go to the Ganma world. Alan and Takeru. And they start looking for Adonis and Makoto. And Adele, while he's there, discovers the latest ridiculous plot device in Ghost is these things called the Ganmizers.
Oh, yeah.
They're like robot ghosts, and they all look like Adele.
Who cares?
There's some sort of security system, and they're fucking omnipresent, and they're
omni-consumer products.
They're all-knowing and all-seeing, and they can tell when someone enters the Ganma world that has ill intention.
Yeah, they can tell when somebody has entered the Ganma world and has ill intentions, except the other three times it's happened in this series.
Well, they woke up this time because it was the third strike you're out. Third strike, the Ganmizers wake up.
I didn't know they went on baseball rules in the Ghost world.
Takeru's gotten in for the third time. We need the Ganmizers, because no one else can handle this shit, apparently.
They all look like Adele, and you think that they're gonna... you naively think they're going to explain...
I imagine they're
what
going
the Ganmizers
to...
are.
I imagine they're going to explain them later. My every prediction about Ghost has come true so far, so I'm gonna go ahead and guess they're gonna explain them later. But for now, they're just these robots.
Oh, Liam, you're so naive.
Yeah, I know. Alan and Ghost, they become separated in a fight, and Makoto's body wakes up and starts running around. And he finds a room full of icons, and the Deep Specter is there. He gets the Spectre icon back, and then he picks up the Deep Specter, and the old man, the sage...
Edith,
that's it. He's like, that's a real dangerous icon you got swinging around there. It draws from the evil in your heart. It draws from the depths.
He's like, I'm going to give it to Takeru, and it'll do bad things if he doesn't face his fears. And Makoto's like, Takeru's never going to do that. That would require him to grow as a character. I'll take it.
So I'll take this thing that's on fire. It's got purple fire on it. And he picks it up, and he takes it with him. And meanwhile, Javert goes to Onari. He stumbles into the temple. And he's trying to attack Onari, but he's just too weak. Onari's like, oh, he fell down. I'll give him some rice buns.
He gives him a shiki button.
A shiki button and some rice balls, some jelly donuts. And it's a rare moment when you see Onari having a little bit of character and doing something that sort of reveals his character.
Yeah.
So he shows mercy to Javert. And that's the only thing that happens in the real world. Alan goes and sees people disintegrating, and he's like, oh my god, that kid, Takeru, he was right. People are disintegrating in the Ghost world. Something's not right here.
I called it many a time.
Yep,
that,
he doesn't know.
They don't know about that shit.
Yeah, I think you were right. It's the Ganma air that's like slowly getting them, and that's why they're going to the human world.
Maybe. Adonis is like, probably knew about it.
Yeah, Adonis.
He's not even surprised when Alan tells him about it.
And that's why he's so worried, because Adele doesn't know, and he's like, maybe Adele's not gonna, like, transport everyone properly, I don't know. It's a guess. But yeah, people are disintegrating, Alan has to face reality, and the baddies catch up to them, and when they talk to Adonis, they see Adonis and they're like, oh, we found him.
God, these names are stupid.
Well, Adonis is a...
Every time you say Adonis, Adele, I'm like, these are so dumb.
They all start with A for some reason.
Yeah, they do.
So they catch up, and the bad guys catch
up
to them.
The big secret is that Amu is from the Ghost world. Dun, dun, dun.
Don't tie Juojer and Ghost together.
No, like... don't touch Juojer's majesty with Ghost's fucking horseshit.
So they catch up, and the baddie, Javert, one of the Javerts, not the Javert, but one of the Javert copies they have, shoots the slowest moving bullet in the history of man. And Adonis dives in front of it and gets shot, and he dies. And Takeru cries with a really silly face, and Adele shows up, and he's got a Ganmizer, and he's like, I'm gonna kill you both now, because Ganmizers are super strong. And that's the end of the episode. So, Jeff, what did you think of Kamen Rider Ghost episode 27?
You know, interestingly enough, the only part of this episode that I was even slightly interested in is when Javert shows up at the temple, and Onari gives him the jelly donuts, and there's a moment when it looks like Javert's gonna have a change of heart.
Yeah, because I guess it's something you don't expect. It's something that isn't completely 100% predictable from start to finish.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Javert was just gonna, like, try and... At somewhere down the line, Javert was gonna be like, Alan, you've become a true traitor. And then, like, some powerful-ass person is gonna be like, show up from the ghost world, and Javert's gonna be like, my savior! And then the ghost world person's just gonna fucking kill him.
Mm.
And then Takeru would have been like, no, you're mean, and transform and get angry.
Yeah, it seems
which
like...
Which is still gonna happen.
At least we have Javert involved. I remember when he was first introduced, and I thought he was just going to be a movie tie-in guy or something for, like, an episode or two. At least he's back, and he's not just a vehicle to show how strong the newest upgrade is. But then again, Deep Spectre next episode, so yeah. You don't know.
Who knows?
He's there, and, it shows a little bit of connection with him, and it shows a little bit of development for Inari. I guess not development, but it's like he does something that reveals his character. He does something that isn't just mugging for the camera and making a silly face. He talks about how, I'm a monk, I show mercy, even to everyone. All life is sacred, because that's Buddhism. And you're like, oh shit, this guy's got a personality, he's got a history, and he's got things that he feels about stuff.
An interesting thing about Onari is that anytime he's not acting like a giant goober and mugging for the camera, he's actually a really cool character.
Yeah, but that's like rare.
It is so rare. Like, the episode where he thought Takeru was gonna die, he was really great throughout that whole episode.
The one where he gets, what's that one? The boost. The one where he gets the boost?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I think, still the best episode.
That was my favorite episode, the whole series.
Yeah.
Absolutely the best.
Still number one in Ghosts. Has not been dethroned yet.
Shockingly, because Ghost has been so good.
Ghost has been a non-stop rapid fire of 10 out of 10 episodes.
A non-stop rapid fire travesty. Onari was really interesting this episode.
Yeah.
Javert seems like he's gonna go somewhere, plot-wise. The rest of the episode wasn't as bad as it has been, except the very beginning with QB.
Yeah, QB is still a superfluous piece of shit character.
That whole scene, though, like, where they're like, oh, I'm in a slump, or whatever, that was completely superfluous.
Yeah, all the scenes in the real world were completely pointless, except for when Javert shows up.
And all the scenes with Igor and his stupid Mozart monster are also completely superfluous. I'm sure that'll come up next episode, but this episode, every time it cut back, I was like, boy, I don't care.
That was something I forgot to mention. It was so jarring, it made me laugh a little bit the second time it happened, because it'll be like, the plot's going on, and they're trying to find Makoto, and Makoto's got his body woke up, and they're gonna get this shit, and then it cuts back to this Ganma, this composer Ganma, waving his arms and going, aha, yes, it's almost complete, and it's literally like a smash cut.
Yeah.
To this, and then smash cut back to the story, and you're like, whoa. It's so weird. It's like someone hits you in the face with a brick while you're watching Ghost.
Meanwhile, it's Skeletor's lair.
Yeah, but it's like if Skeletor spoke one line, and then they went, and it was like 2 seconds.
It went back to him, and he went, yeah, and then it just went to the next scene.
Just in case, kids, Skeletor is still here.
He still exists. Igor still exists, kids.
Igor has not left the plot, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
If Igor just disappeared next episode, I wouldn't notice. If he was just gone.
I wouldn't either.
Like, episode 43, I'd be like, wait, what happened to that mad scientist? Where'd he go? Oh, well.
The rest of the episode was pretty okay. I really enjoyed the fact that, although not much was done with it, the fact that Takeru's the one to find Adonis.
Mm.
I thought Adonis was going to be like, I'm all-knowing man, I'm going to be real wise with you right now, Takeru, and give you some information. Instead, he was like a realistic person. It was like, who the fuck are you? What are you doing here?
I think the reunion between Adonis and Adele are fucking... I'm confusing all the A names.
Adonis between and Amu.
And Alan could have been a tad more, like, emotional.
Purposeful?
Purposeful. Because I know Alan is sort of cold and calculating because that's who he was raised. But it seems like Adonis sort of knows his shit. He knows sorrow. He knows human emotions.
Yeah.
So he the fact that he was so... It's a scene that should have a lot more going on between the two of them. Especially because he doesn't know his son's alive. He thought his son, Alan, was dead. And he's like, oh, he's alive. And that's I'm meeting good. Him right now. Yeah, he's like, that's good. But it's like, shouldn't this guy be a little more... yeah, like, I get it with all the others, but, like, this guy, we've seen hints, and it led to nothing for his personality.
Everything led to nothing. Like, the whole build-up was like, we're gonna go to the ghost world so that we can get information from Adonis. That's what Alan's entire motivation was. And he gets there, and he's like, Adonis, here are my questions. I will lay them out before you. And Adonis is like... I'm not going to answer any of those. I don't know why you're bothering asking me. I'm going to die in like 5 seconds.
Well, just follow your heart, dude. And then the Ganmiser appears. That's another thing I thought was kind of weird about this episode. I don't know how to feel about the Ganmisers because they are so out of nowhere.
Yeah, there's no information about them at all. Like, if I was Adele, I would be a little bit more worried about the Ganmisers. I would be... a little more incredulous with the Ganmisers.
But they
like,
look
they
exactly...
They show up and they're like, we're the defense system of this realm. We're gonna stop whatever. And he's like, oh, cool. New minions.
They look exactly like me, though, so what could possibly go wrong?
That never turns out that the copy of me is gonna fucking try to replace me in anything.
No.
So...
when have clones ever gone wrong? Okay, so first they were, like, panels that are prayed to in order to do nothing, because it's just a symbolic ceremony.
Yeah.
And then they're lasers, and then they're an upgrade for random Ganma, and now they're a security system. So what the fuck... what... I guess, like I said, we'll find out, but, like...
travel forward in time, like, 6 or 7 months, and ask the fucking writers, and they might be able to give you a coherent answer then.
No, Ghost
right
is...
now, they're like, fuck, we wrote ourselves into a corner. What do we ran out of people to show up and be strong. What do we do?
Ghost is written by 100 different people, and each person writes one line on the page. And then
they play that game where they play write a sentence and pass it to the next person, so and they write another sentence.
So none of them actually knows what's happening. The guy just got the script, and in the line, I am the Ganmiser, is on it, and he was like, oh, fuck, where do I take this? Shit.
There's one asshole in the group every time you play that game, too. They pass it to him, and he's like, Mozart sings, and hands it to the next guy.
Smash cut to Mozart on a stage. Oh, fuck.
What
oh,
do
Will.
I do with this? Let's just go back to what I was writing before.
Oh, Hank, why you always do that crap?
Fucking Hank Yamamoto. What an asshole.
Yeah, that's what it feels like sometimes with Ghost.
The episode wasn't as bad as the previous episodes have been.
No, we get to see a bit of Onari. We get to see some
God,
development
that's
in the story.
I never thought I would hear you say.
Yeah,
we get to see a bit of an Onari, my favorite.
You know, it's like I could say I hate a certain meal. Let's say curry, for example, even though I love curry. I hate curry.
I was
curry.
About to say, you piece of shit. Curry's
fucking
delicious.
I fucking love curry, but like, I hate curry, but if someone makes good curry, I'll eat it. I like good curry.
That's not true. I fucking, like, I hate... what's something I hate? I hate cucumbers.
Oh, wow. How do you hate cucumbers? They're just watery. They just taste like water.
That's why I hate them.
This is like eating water. How do you hate that?
I want to drink water. I don't want to eat water in vegetable form.
It's so unique, though.
Fuck cucumbers.
Okay.
It
but
doesn't
someone...
matter who puts cucumbers in what. I'm not eating that shit.
What
it's
if,
disgusting.
What if someone prepared a real nice cucumber with some dressing and some seasoning and some nice sides?
I would boot that shit out the door.
Wow.
I would drop kick the plate out the door.
I think we're learning a lot about the differences between me and Jeff today.
Americans and Canadians, everybody. If somebody made me that, I would eat it and pretend like I liked it. In real life. I wouldn't be like, I don't want this shit. I would eat it and be like, this is good. You know what a better example is?
Okay.
Sauerkraut.
Why? How come... I always notice this, but how come it always comes down to food analogies with not just us, but with everyone? Every time they have
to thought you were going to say Americans. I was like, fuck you, buddy.
I guess Americans, too. It's always like, hey, you paid for poop if you eat a thing, if you fucking watch a movie I don't like. It's the exact same as eating poopy.
Yeah, you eat shit when you play a game that I don't like.
And welcome to the internet. Yeah,
if somebody made really good sauerkraut, I still wouldn't like it, because I don't like sauerkraut.
Wow. Okay, well, I like good onari, is my point.
Yeah, I do too.
If the writers know what they're doing with onari, I like them, but they don't know what they're doing with them 90% of the time.
Look at the beginning of this episode for a nice fucking view into how not to use onari and how to make me hate him.
Yeah, he decides out of nowhere that he wants to teach QB the principles of being a monk.
Yeah, there is a joke with 16 fucking quotation marks around it in this episode where he looks at the camera after QB misunderstands him, makes a dumb face, and says, he misunderstands.
Yeah. Thanks, Onari. Thanks for letting me know.
That's the joke.
Just in case you didn't see it, kids. This is a Ganma, and he doesn't quite get what's going on. He's having trouble adjusting to human life. Get the wacky music in the background.
The QB sitcom coming this fall. Good Onari is few and far between, and it was nice to see that. Akari isn't really in this episode very much.
Akari technically appears in this episode. For legal contract purposes, she appears.
Shibuya and Narita appear in this episode as well. That's not saying much.
Yeah, appear in the most literal sense of the word, in that they're on screen a couple times.
Which one is which?
I think Shibuya is the one with glasses.
Narita is the one who has the gag. His legs fall asleep.
He's the one with the crazy legs, yeah.
Crazy legs.
He's trying to sit cross-legged, and they fall asleep, and that's the joke.
That's the joke, everyone.
Thanks.
It's almost like the show is written by idiots.
It's almost like the show is written just to get it out the door, because they know the stupid 8-year-olds watching it in Japan don't care.
If only we were stupid 8-year-olds.
Oh, if only I could be a stupid 8-year-old, everything would be so simple.
Instead of being stupid 20-somethings.
Oh...
So you thought this episode was above par?
I thought this episode was straight down the middle of the road.
So it was par.
It was par, which for Ghost is a 10 out of 10, but...
That's true.
It was a decent episode.
It was a decent episode. We had plot progression. We had some characterization. A
couple mysteries. I'm a bit curious as to what the Ganmizers are. They seem silly, but I want to know what's up with them.
I don't really want to see any more of them, because they have, like, dude camel toes, like, nobody's fucking business.
It's not a... I didn't notice that. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I did. There's, like, a pattern on their fucking suit that points right at their dicks.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Toku. Are you trying to tell me that Toku is a little bit homoerotic sometimes, Jeff?
I'm not saying I wear Toku with pants, is all I'm saying, buddy. No, that just keeps popping into my fucking field of vision every time they show up. I'm like, just put a cup on. Put a cup on.
Nope.
Just wear a cup.
Nope, you're gonna see dicks.
I watch Kuga. I'm used to seeing dicks through fabric.
Kuga's more ass. Kuga, there's so much ass.
Yeah, Kuga is straight up like you're looking at a dude's ass. There's no way around it.
Oh, well.
But the Ganmizers don't interest me because it's just like, I know where it's going. Adele's gonna be like, I'm the perfect being, I'm indestructible, and eventually Takeru's gonna be like, my soul's gonna burn bright, and kick him, and he's gonna be all hurt and be like, Ganmizers, and they're gonna fucking destroy him, and be like, we are in control.
Wouldn't it be fucking crazy? So they wake up, and they're like, we detect a threat to this world. Wouldn't it be fucking crazy if it was Adele that was the threat?
Yeah, that would make a hell of a lot more sense.
Because he's misinterpreting his father?
Yeah, that'd make a hell of a lot more sense than Takeru has shown up 3 times now. He is the threat.
He's got past us 2 times in the past. He's not getting out this time. We got fucking penises now to stop him.
Whatever. I'm not really that psyched about the Ganmizers. I'm excited for Heat Miser and Snow Miser, though.
Heat. Oh, you...
Oh, you.
Oh, you.
We got jokes in this episode, everybody. Oh, we got jokes.
We are funny, funny people. In case you forgot.
So this episode is like 20 out of 40.
20 out of 40, I guess.
It was all right.
I give this episode an okay out of...
All right, why don't you tell us a little bit about some news? I think we're done talking about ghosts.
Okay, I got two pieces of news, but they're both quite interesting.
Oh my god, we got more than one piece of news?
I know. So, the summer movies were announced for Ghost and for Juojer.
Mm-hmm.
It does that Toei thing where they're just like, yeah, the summer movies are happening, and everyone goes, well, can you give us a detail? Can you give us a name? Can you give us anything? And they're like, nope,
no,
just, they're happening. But something interesting happened, and that's that the on the website for the movies, there is a Marvel credit, Marvel Comics credit, down at the bottom.
I know what that is.
What is it?
Battle Fever J.
Oh, shit, you're probably right.
Yeah,
Battle Fever J was Marvel.
For people who don't know, Battle Fever J was actually a team-up between Marvel Comics in America and Toei Productions. It was part of the line... I think originally it was supposed to be Captain America.
Yeah, it was.
And
yeah.
They were going to make like a Captain Japan,
yeah.
And they decided to turn it into like a team instead.
It was kind of like a weird... It's one of the like odd man out Sentais, because it was really early on before Sentai had any sort of established formula. And like it...
Yeah.
Does it even count as... I guess they count it officially as a Sentai, but...
They do.
There it is.
And, It was around the same time that, like, Japanese Spider-Man happened. It was a big deal between Toei and Marvel. So that's probably what the Marvel thing is, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to figure that shit out.
Fuck, you're probably not. That was my news. It wasn't the... Shit, I was like, oh, what could that mean? Maybe Japanese Spider-Man's coming back. No, it's... You're... Fuck, it's...
You know, it could be Japanese Spider-Man as well. That would be fucking sweet.
I appreciate you humoring me, Jeff, but it's too late.
I'm sorry I dashed your fucking hopes. Wouldn't that be perfect, though? Like, Spider-Man's gonna be in Civil War, and he's also going to be in the summer movie with Kamen Rider.
Do a fucking Kamen Rider Civil War. Do a Heisei vs. Showa, but good.
Yeah, Kamen Rider Civil War already happened. It was shit.
Please do it better, and not bad.
Yeah, this is a summer movie, buddy. The spring movie's the one that's bad, isn't it?
No, the Kamen Rider, the crossover, they're both bad. They're usually both
bad. They're
all bad.
All of it's bad. All Tokusatsu.
Yeah. I don't know. Heisei versus Showa, we've said our piece.
Yeah, if you would like to hear more about why we hate Heisei versus Showa, please direct your face to the Rider Club commentary for Heisei vs. Showa, now available in our store for $0.
Now available.
Zero cents.
Now available at the Rider Club Radio gift shop on your left as you exit.
It's got Tamaz in it, I guess.
Tamaz runs the counter at the gift shop.
And you can get a t-shirt. I meant the fucking commentary, but I guess that makes sense. Give me
Shit.
Some more news, buddy.
Okay, so there's a new Kamen Rider Drive Gaiden V-Cinema announced.
Oh, yeah. Has that actually been really announced, or is it just the image that's floating around?
It's official.
Ah.
It's Kamen Rider Maha and Kamen Rider Heart. Not Heart,
Kamen
Rider
Heart.
Kamen Rider Heart,
yeah.
So it's like a doubleheader like they did with Gaim Gaiden. And all I know is the Mach 1 takes place after the novel. Remember that Mach novel that came out a while ago that we didn't read?
Yeah, I didn't read that, so I don't know what happens.
I didn't read it because I don't speak Japanese, but it takes place after that. Hopefully you don't need to read the novel to know what's going on. And you can buy the special edition ticket and get some toys, like a new... You can get a little... You know, Mach had that, like, motorcycle thing combination... That thing where he would link up with Chase's motorcycle.
Yeah, I
the
know
ride
he
crosser.
Never actually used it.
The ride crosser. Or
yeah,
wait,
he
no.
never used it. Chase did.
Yeah, it was... Or wait, were the ride crossers the... No, those are the ride boosters. I'm getting my toys mixed up.
Yeah, ride crosser is the two motorcycles that
yes.
go together.
You can get a toy ride crosser and a toy shift car that Heart uses. It's called, like, the shift Heart boost heart power. I don't know.
It's called, I don't know these it's things. It's just called heart, and it has a picture of Mati on it.
Yeah.
That's reference to a show most of our audience has probably never seen.
Oh, everyone knows Captain Planet. Come on.
You gave away my esoteric reference. Now all my fucking nerd cred's down the drain.
All your fucking Captain Planet fan club cred
Look,
is gone.
Look, everybody loves Captain Planet. Fuck you. We watched Kamen Rider Captain Planet not long ago. Thank you very much.
Hey, J-Day was a huge success. There's
J-Day was
news.
Great. I only got like 4 pictures from people besides me.
Hey, you know what? I wasn't expecting anyone to do it, so.
Neither was I. But people actually fucking planted trees and gardens and saplings, so thank you guys for all that.
That was really cool. You can find those pictures on our Twitter page of people planting stuff. And we got together and we watched Kamen Rider J, and it was a really fun time.
Yeah, we didn't fuck up the stream either. Everything went right.
Ever since Jeff took over handling the sync tubes, everything's been smooth sailing, so.
That is pure happenstance, sir. It's not that I'm good at it. It's
absolute
just things fall into
coincidence.
Place.
It was a fun sync tube, though. It's good.
It was a good time, and if you missed it, you're dumb.
Yeah, you fucked up. You really fucked up this life thing, didn't you?
God, why the fuck everything? Give me some more news, Liam.
That's it. The Marvel credit and the Drive V Cinema. Those are my 2 news things.
Oh yeah, you only had 2.
Yeah, I had 2. That's it.
Well, how about we move away from news? Let's talk about Animal Sentai Juojira episode 10. Liam, what did you think about this episode?
Okay, so let's give a real quick overview first.
Okay, this episode has some shit going down in it.
Yeah, they make a big barrier, and it closes in, and you have to... It's like
Well, Master Genis is like, you know what? I'm joining the game now. And even the people in the game are like, oh shit.
Oh shit, everything's gonna... Oh boy.
Shit's going down, I guess the game's over.
And they make a big hemisphere, and it kills everything it touches, and it just encloses, and the Juojiras just have to find the switch to stop it. So it's a very riveting, very high-stakes plot.
Also, a cat dies in this episode.
I must be a sociopath because I chuckled a little bit at that.
Fuck!
The special effects are so bad, and it's just this cat sitting there, and like you can tell the cat does not know what's going on, like both in-universe and out-of-universe.
Oh, yeah.
They just told it to sit there, and then this awful special effect of the cat just like, and you hear a little meow. I was sitting there like,
it was okay. Thinking back on it, it is funny, but at the time I was like, holy shit, that cat died, they're gonna let that happen in this show?
Juojo is like, the writers are trying to sneak in as many implied deaths as possible.
Yeah,
and they're like, please let us just kill just one thing, and they're like, you can just kill a cat, just a cat,
who cares, like, about cats,
we'll take it. Japanese people known for hating cats.
Oh yeah. Hello Kitty is absolutely not popular or from there.
They created just to be reviled.
Fun fact, Hello Kitty is not a cat.
What is it?
They were talking to the creator, and they were like, yeah, what does the cat Hello Kitty do for fun, being a cat? And the creator was, like, offended. She was like, she's not a cat. She's a little girl.
What?
I guess everybody in the interview was like, okay.
That's a little girl who had a terrible, terrible accident when she was young.
Yeah, what the fuck? Anyway.
Okay, I like this episode a lot because I guess it's just the little things, again, the show is full of little things, is that Genis gets involved. Everybody is like, oh god, oh, what's Genis gonna do? And he does actually something fucking crazy and brutal and really, really awful, which is like, it's more than just like, send a monster down, and the monster fights stuff and has, like, a plan. Genis is like, I'm just gonna fucking create a death field, and it's gonna close in on the Juojiras, and they're gonna die in it. It's so simple.
And it's like a plan that, like, a real-world villain that had that kind of power would have. Like, why would I send a monster? I could just kill them all in a death field.
I just make this hemisphere, and he's sadistic about it, because, like, It puts so many innocents in danger at the same time.
Yeah, he's getting like a giant monster boner the whole time.
I guess that's kind of the death Galeons, everything they do. But it's really cool. It's very cool. It's very scary. It's the kind of thing that's like you can sort of empathize. They show a lot of innocents in danger, and it helps you sort of get that picture of the stakes and of the heightened danger.
The weird thing is, and this happens sometimes in a lot of different tokusatsu, where the main character is like, oh no, we have to stop this evil! And then, like, a little girl or a little boy is in danger, and then, like, off to the side, the parents are, like, screaming bloody murder with, like, real fucking panic and terror in their voices.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so jarring. Like, a little girl is standing there, and, like, our heroes rescue her and take care of her, and because they've been moping a little bit during this, because they cannot find the switch to turn off the death field. That's Master Genesis' whole thing. He wants them to search for a switch, and if they don't find it, everybody's going
to
die.
Yeah, because it is still a game, and there has to be some sort of win condition, so he hides a switch for them to find.
And they can't find it, so Tusk, Leo, and Sayla are like, fuck it, we can't find it, we can't find the champion symbol, we're never going to go home, this fucking sucks.
What I like about that, though, is that they still help people. They don't mope around and act like dicks. They're like, well, we can't find the switch. Let's just evacuate as many civilians into the safest place as possible. Like, they're not just... You don't hate them. It's so nice to see superheroes that save people between Ghost... between Ghost, who is a fucking moron, and Amazons, which is so dreary, and all the... Like, I don't know, Batman v Superman just came out recently.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so refreshing to see a superhero that's just like, I'm trying to save as many people from dying as possible.
I thought it was a really good split between the people who were crushed by their despair and the people who, or the Jiwogers that were crushed by their despair and the Jiwogers who decided to keep looking. Because we've learned previously that Amu is the brave face. She puts it on so that she can continue to function properly.
It's more clever even than it looks, because it's a continuation. It's like a callback to the foreshadowing of the first Amu episode with Amu what's his name?
Yamato,
where everyone else, again, gives up on finding the champion symbol, and they... together discover Yamato's super sight, and they find what turns out to be Cube Giraffe, but, like, it's the same thing. Like, everyone else sort of is more mopey, and Amu is the one who sort of toughs it out, because that's her thing.
It's a brilliant continuation of character, even, like, a continuation of what happened last episode with Sayla. This show is actually really not as episodic as we make it out to be.
There's little consistency, there's little threads.
It's character consistency is what it is, though. So it is fairly episodic, but there's character consistency throughout that brings you from one episode to the other. Like, last episode, Sayla was really depressed because her parents were in the other world, and it was their anniversary. And this episode starts with her... looking at a comical photograph of a shark on the wall, longingly.
She sees a picture of a shark, and she's like, oh, my parents look kind of like that. Oh. It's continuity. Continuity. You can jump in any episode of Jiwoger and enjoy yourself, but if you watch it all the way through, there's, like, this little extra layer of consistency that lends itself to... And I remember watching that and going, oh, man, we're going to get two Sayla episodes in a row? Like, is this going to be an overarching... plot thread or something? And it wasn't, but, like,
that could continue on.
It probably will. I hope it does. I hope we deal with Sayla's insecurities and worries in the future.
This episode defied my expectations quite a lot. I expected them to all team up and do, like, the heroic thing and find they were gonna find the switch, and there was going to be a monster to stop them. Like, maybe they had to fight Narita, and that's why she was there.
Mm.
Instead, they find it, and it turns out to be the monster, and they don't win against it.
Yeah, it's super strong.
It beats the shit out of them on the ground, and then turns giant and beats the shit out of them again.
I guess they need help from fucking Kamen Rider Kaiza if they want to do anything.
What is the eagle's name? Do we know that yet?
His name is... I don't think we know, no. His name is Eagle. It's probably been revealed in a fucking TV coon or something like that, but I don't read that shit.
You don't read Japanese.
I don't read Japanese. It's probably...
Japanese. I really tried to say Japanese, but I kept fucking auto-correcting. That's what that pause was about.
Jeff's brain has the locks to prevent him from saying Japanese.
I was stuck in a fucking loop in my brain trying to get that out of my mouth. If you ever want to know how to shut me down, try and make me say Japanese.
Japanese. It'll stop. It'll confuse Jeff long enough that you can get a punch in.
It's like saying a logical fallacy to a robot. Shuts him the fuck down.
Yeah, but that's what I like about this episode, is the big bad gets involved and it actually matters. It's different from all the other episodes. It's more dangerous. They lose. They get their asses kicked. They need outside help.
It's weird how Genis is like, he was sort of a non-person, mostly. Like, he was just the boss. He sat there and didn't drink the alcohol he held all the time, because his mouth was alight.
Yeah.
But once he actually gets involved, he starts to become really, like, threatening with his fucking... He's like a horrible sadist.
Yeah.
Like, he obviously has a boner under the giant monster that carries him around.
Listening to people scream, yeah.
And he seems like a legitimate, horrible threat now.
Yeah, I like him.
The monster has apparently obliterated planets, so it'll be cool to see how our heroes... It looks like there's going to be some training...
Oh,
next
boy.
Episode. Then we get to see how our heroes take down a planet-destroying monster.
That'll be cool. I'm excited to see that.
Me too. And it looks like Kaize is their trainer. He's like the old sensei.
That's cool. He's got gray hair. He's got to be old.
He looks like he's 30, but he's got to be an old man. He's got gray hair.
That's old for Japanese people.
I guess that's true. In Japanese media, if you're 30, you're old as fuck.
You're fucking done.
I guess not in Amazon's.
I guess not in Amazon's, no.
But,
Does Naria...
Juojur is consistently good, is all I was gonna say.
Go ahead. Yeah. Does Naria look like a pile of titties to you? She looks like a huge pile of boobies.
I didn't notice that. Yeah, but I did notice the Ganmizer's dicks, so I guess that shows a lot about me.
Next time you look at Naria, look real close, because she got boobs hanging off of her head and her shoulders, and like on her hips, there's boobs hanging off.
The only thing I can notice about Naria is her mouth is open slightly, and she has like British teeth.
Like they're fucked up, or...
Wow, Liam.
Well, what
did
else
everyone
do you mean
see what Liam just said?
What else do you mean when you say British
she
teeth?
She got fucked up teeth!
Yeah, okay, so don't fucking tell me.
They're not fucked up, they're just, like, obviously fake teeth. And they're, sticking out a little bit, so it's awkward. Every time I see her, I'm like, why did they do that?
I never noticed that. It's busy looking at boobies.
You were too busy looking at all, like, 20 tits all over...
She's got boobies everywhere, but on her actual boobies.
I guess I'll look and see next time I watch Juojur. Last word on Juojur, it's fucking great! If you're not watching it, fucking watch it. It's
Please.
Way better than Ghosts.
Yeah, it's 10 times better than Ghosts.
It's like 100 times better than Ghosts.
Not even, like, by the standards of a Super Sentai series, it's better. It's just a better show.
Yeah, like, the stakes in this episode felt higher than the entirety of the stakes in Ghosts. And the world is always in peril in Ghost. Like, the Ganmas are gonna take over the world, but who fucking cares?
I think it's because Ghost tries to have deep character stakes, but Ghost doesn't have characters in it, so...
It's... You know what has characters in it?
Juojur. Yeah, how about that?
Also, my favorite moment of the entire episode is after they tag-team to get the... It's also really... That's really cool in itself. They tag-team to get the switch off the top of the building. Like, Sayla's like, Leo, it's up there! And he runs up the side of the building comically. Yeah. And he throws it down, and Tusk comically grabs it with his trunk.
It's a real cavalcade of bad CGI, but it's cool looking.
But it's cool that they work together like that. And then after they're done, Leo and Tusk, like, clasp hands, like best friends.
Just
I was like, I didn't even
moment.
Know they were friends.
Yeah.
That's my favorite moment, though.
Oh, that's good.
Now let's talk about Kamen Rider Amazons Episode 2, since it came out an hour after we finished recording last week. I'm sure 3 will come out an hour after this one.
Yep, can't wait. So, Jeff, what'd you think of Amazons 2?
I really fucking like Amazons, man.
It's really good.
We're getting into some, like, philosophical territory in Amazons. The, like, eat or be eaten style, like, Nietzscheism.
I like that. And this is the episode where Amazon Omega, he gets his ass beat by Alpha, and Alpha sort of takes him back and teaches him everything about what it means to be an Amazon and what Amazons are.
Sorta.
Well,
he kind of does, while he kills a chicken and makes dinner.
And meanwhile, the team, the SWAT team, has to hunt their former teammate who turned into a dragonfly last episode. Yeah. That's the conflict
in this episode. Is he actually a dragonfly? Are we sure about that?
I am 65% certain that he's a dragonfly.
He does kind of look like Kamen Rider Drake.
Yeah, his
but
wings
he,
look
he
really...
He has like a black and yellow bee pattern on his head.
No, his wings look very dragonfly-ish.
That's probably true. He's probably a dragonfly.
Yeah, so that's the conflict in this episode. And I like a lot that we learn just enough about Jin, but not so much. They don't give us everything. They show you his life philosophy as he teaches it to this young'un whose name I don't remember. It was on Omega.
Haruka. That's what it is.
Haruka.
There's a weird moment in this episode where the leader of the executioner squad, the exterminator squad, is like, when we took this job, we all did it for the same reason. I did, you did, Nozomi did, even Jin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did they ask who the hell Jin is if he was part of the team before?
That's interesting.
Like, does he look different now? Is he... It's interesting, you know?
He's got that blonde streak in his hair.
They can't tell anymore.
It's an episode where you learn a lot in this episode. You learn a lot about Jin, and you learn a lot about the history of the Amazons. And I think that's good for an episode 2. Because, like, the first episode pulls you in. It gives you the concept. It gives you the action. It gives you the shit. And then the second episode is like, okay, this is what the story of the show is going to be about. This is all the mysteries and all the stuff that you're going to follow up on, and here's your like Kamen Rider's setup.
Dude, I was so into this episode as I was watching it. When the businessman, like the lady's assistant, is telling them about the Amazons, and they're like, how many Amazons are there? And he says, 4,000. I said out loud without even realizing, what? 4,000?
Yeah.
They kidnapped and experimented on 4,000 fucking people?
Apparently.
I mean, we don't know how they got their test subjects or why, but 4,000?
Considering the fact he says the reason why there's Amazons now is because they got out 2 years ago. And all they had was their Gigi armlets, which is the thing. The Gigi armlets give you medicine.
Yeah.
And when the medicine runs out, you turn into an Amazon, and they have a 2-year time limit. So now they're emerging now. And he uses the word escaped. He says there was an accident and the experiments escaped, so I imagine they were there against their will.
4,000.
4,000. I love the way they use little visual elements from Amazon's costume as real life things. Like, you have the Amazon drivers, obviously.
Yeah.
And you have the Gigi armlets, but they have like a totally different sort of explanation.
Yeah, they're not
in
mystical like in the original Amazon series.
Yeah,
they have a secondary purpose.
I remember when Jin puts one on Haruka's arm, and he said, "This will give you the medicine." I looked at it and I was like, "That thing looks kind of small. Wouldn't it run out?" And he says, "Yeah, it's gonna run out, and then you'll turn into an Amazon." And I was like, "Oh fuck, yeah!" The writers in the show actually think about when they write them.
People write this show. We're used to watching Ghosts. So.
Yeah. There's a writer who wants to be there.
The best part of this entire episode is how fucking like emotional it becomes when the exterminators have to kill their friend.
Yeah.
Who's become a monster. Like, you start to wonder, like, what the fuck would I do in that situation?
Yeah, because you see in the last episode how tight they are as a unit, as a squad.
Yeah.
So this episode is all about having to kill one of their friends, and it actually has a real implication in the end. There's the bit where the guy, he's aiming his gun at I forget his name, the dragonfly. And
Otaki.
Otaki, and he's like, sorry man, I gotta do it, and Otaki says his name.
And he stops, and then Otaki fucking attacks him.
And you get this little sense that, oh, maybe he's, like, gonna fight it, maybe?
Yeah.
You as the audience, you get a little bit of hope, and then, no, Otaki fucking kills him.
Yeah, Jin's dead.
Oh, boy.
And fucking, like, the whole episode, as soon as they started talking about, like, what the Amazons really are, I was like, what the fuck is the deal with Mamoru, then? The mole Amazon.
Yeah, they
like, why is he cognizant when he transforms?
What I thought it was something to do with the Gigi Armlet, but obviously not. I think it's just some people got it and some people don't, because that's like what they seem to say.
Some people can suppress it, because Otaki says, I thought I would be like Mamoru and be able to suppress it.
Yeah, I think Mamoru he's just really lucky, or he's got a very strong will or something. He's got it.
He's a little crybaby when he's not the mole Amazon. He's basically the jobber. His job is to show up and lose to the monsters so one of the Amazons can kill it.
I like that every episode, or well, I guess both episodes so far have ended on cliffhangers, or like a fight about to happen. And it's Amazon Alpha and Omega fighting each other in both of them.
That's true. Maybe that'll happen in every episode.
That would get pretty fucking tiring. But yeah, it's neat that they do it in this, like this sort of. In the first one, he's a crazy beast, and in the second one, he's still a crazy beast, but he's got the armlet and the belt, and shit's a little different this time. He's much stronger. It's a really neat scene when he fucking bisects the dragonfly.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He hits him and the dragonfly just fucking comes apart at the waist and rolls down the hill.
It was like an old samurai movie.
Yeah, where they do
like the charge slash and one of them falls apart afterwards.
Yeah, it was of course Kamen Rider special effects, but it looked very cool.
I thought it looked really good because it was obviously mostly done with real like stuff.
Yeah, they pull the camera out so you can't see too close, and it looks better than the usual special effects in Kamen Rider.
I liked it a lot personally, but
yeah.
Whatever. This episode of Amazons is great. If you haven't started watching Amazons yet, you think it's I don't know, if you're dumb and think it's too edgy.
It's pretty edgy. It's a dreary show.
Watch it. It's fucking...
It's really
good,
though.
It's not upbeat at all. It's not. But it's not edgy. It's just a darker tone series. It's not, like, Spawn.
I wouldn't say it. Like, it's not needless in its grimness. There's no point where you're like, okay, that's too much. Or that's just fucking, you know...
It's not like a big-budget slasher movie or something where people's guts are flying out and shit.
Yeah.
They step on a fruit wearing a mask. It's not scary. Watch it. Amazons is fucking great. If you enjoy early Heisei at all,
yeah,
I feel like Amazons is right up your alley. It's probably what you've been waiting for quite a while.
It harkens back to that time when Kamen Rider could still be anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And it creates a world a lot better than Rider series have been doing for a while now.
Yeah, it interests you in the world. It leaves enough unsaid. Which is very, very good. It's a point in its favor.
There's a lot of really, really good cinematography and camera work in this series. Like, whenever things get really tense, like the scene with the assistant, the guy who keeps holding the shit over his face and talking about the Amazons, you can tell how fucking tense that room is. And it's because the camera starts to get in real close, start doing Dutch angles.
Oh,
and that's doing like cool visual style, like doing it through the banisters of the little walkway, or doing it behind one character's back or underneath one character. It's just, it creates a mood in a way that a flat long shot or a shot reverse shot in Kamen Rider Ghost just does not.
Yeah, it's a scene where one guy is standing in a room talking to a bunch of other people standing in a room, and they manage to keep the camera moving around enough that it stays visually interesting, that you don't want to just look away.
It creates a tension, and the thing I always think about when I think of creating tension in movies and television is the Mexican showdown in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You've seen that, haven't you?
Nope.
Wow, shit. You need to get on that. That movie's fucking excellent.
I own the movie on Blu-ray.
Holy shit.
Never watched
but
it.
The three principal characters, the good, the bad, and the ugly, are all standing in this.
Is the last one you? Ha!
I want everyone to know that Liam has a small penis.
Oh, don't. You're not supposed to tell me.
Yes, I'm the ugly, goddammit. So the three characters are standing around in like a Mexican showdown. They're standing at the edges of this graveyard, this big opening in a graveyard. And the lead up to them drawing and firing is almost, it's probably like 4 minutes long. And it is the tensest 4 minutes of your entire fucking life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done with cool long angles, close angles, Dutch angles, close-ups, and music. And I feel like Amazon's really accomplishes that in a lot of places. On the other hand, some of the fight scenes get into shaky cam territory at some points, which bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's sort of the... I feel like the showmakers, the showrunners, are pushing to make it feel more Western in style than most other Rider series. So there's a lot more of, like, a military angle to it, and, like you said, shaky cam, it's kind of dreary, like Western superheroes are.
Interestingly enough, now that you say that, it reminds me of, like, the Transformers movies, but done really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a more...
Because there's a heavy military style to it. It's, like, done with... I want to say, like, a heavy dose of realism. The Transformers movies went off the fucking rails, and they were always awful. But they started out trying to be really realistic.
More realistic. Comparatively realistic to the
cartoon. And I feel like they're taking a lot of cues from that, but doing it much, much better.
Maybe Kobayashi went to a movie theater and sat down and watched Transformers, and she was like, I can do better than this. I'll show them.
I'll show America. They're never going to see this, but I'll show them.
I'll show that audience that will never officially see my work.
We love you in America. The Americas, Kobayashi.
Yeah, all the Americas.
Probably South America, too. Probably. I don't know anybody from there, but they probably like...
I know Brazilians fucking love Kamen Rider.
Brazilians love Kamen Rider Black.
Well, that's a gateway.
That's what I hear, like, the big stereotype is that Brazilians only watch Kamen Rider Black and hate other Kamen Rider.
Really?
That's the stereotype I hear on the internet, but well, as we all know, stereotypes are not true.
That's the most specific stereotype I've ever heard. Brazilian Kamen Rider fans are like this. that's some targeted stereotyping right
no
there.
No kidding.
Laser focus.
God damn.
Is that all we have to say about Amazon this week?
It's really fucking good. It really does at creating a tone. It really does well at making you care about these characters. And there's a lot of them. So that's especially, like, good.
And it's none of them are safe. They're dying.
Yeah. But I hate to spoil it. He was only in one episode. Jun is dead.
June is dead.
He was the nervous rookie.
Yep.
But so I guess that's not a shocker that he's
dead.
That.
They when you have a show that has a big cast and is only going on for 13 episodes, you can be a little more liberal about killing them. You don't have to like save them all for the 50 episode and then start killing them off around like episode 40 or something.
It's not being used as a crutch either. Like, a lot of writers use killing off a character as, like, oh god, I don't know how to get emotions out of other human beings. If they don't know how to fucking get emotion out of other humans, they just kill characters.
Yeah.
They're not using that as a crutch.
It happens if it happens. It's not like the big event of the show. It's not like you have everybody talking about, oh, this, who's gonna die? Who's gonna die this episode? Because it's not about who dies, it's about the fucking story.
Fucking fast.
Yeah.
So Amazon's is great. If you're not watching it, please watch it. We get money every time we get somebody to watch it.
That's part of the contract. Yeah, keep telling them to watch Amazon's. You can shit-talk
really
Ghost, just advertise Amazon's.
We have
as hard
to watch every episode of Ghost, but we can shit-talk it. We only got one email this time.
Oh...
Kelsey gives us her opinion, saying that she has warmer feelings towards Ghost, but it seems to be falling into the pitfall of middle portion dragging. And she's worried that Alan and Makoto are going to steal the show away from Takeru.
Middle portion dragging?
She has warm feelings towards Ghost.
Okay.
So she is blinded to the truth. She also tells us that Amu's special sense was revealed in Episode 2.
Okay.
She has a good sense of taste and can pick out various flavors, even when they have been mixed together. I do remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, she eats a thing.
That's her special skill? That sucks.
That's worthless. It reminds me, did you watch Daredevil, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
I remember there's one scene in Daredevil that has...
Spoilers!
It's not a spoiler. It has fucking terrible implications, though, where somebody's got a wound and it opens up, and Daredevil's like, oh, your wound opened up, and she's like, how do you know? And he's like, I can taste the blood particles in the air. And that's...
How does he use a public restroom?
How do you walk outside if you can, like, what if a guy, like, okay, say you live in college, you got a roommate, and the guy jerks off, and then he's, like, in the next room, can you taste it in the air?
Oh,
can you taste the
Liam! Liam, no!
Can you taste everything everywhere if you're within, like, five feet of it?
He lives in fucking New York City, too. People are just pissing in back alleys everywhere. Does he taste the piss at all times?
Can he taste a cigarette if someone's smoking next to him? Can he taste it? That's so fucking terrible.
Also...
It's a curse.
It really is. Kelsey, it gives some credence to fucking Ben Affleck Daredevil sleeping in a deprivation tank, doesn't it?
I would live in a deprivation tank if that was my life.
Kelsey also says, as for Yamato's parents, I think it'd be more interesting if he was estranged rather than them joining the dead parents pile.
Yeah.
You're probably right. That would make for a better, longer story.
Yeah, I could get down with that.
Finally, here's my question. Have you heard of Kamen Rider Spirits? Kelsey, I'm gonna guess you're a newer fan of Rider Cult Radio.
We have sucked that dick quite a few times on this podcast.
I think that was the most talked about topic during the early episodes of Rider Club Radio, me trying to get people to read Spirits.
Kamen Rider Spirits is, I think, it's partially translated. I think someone picked it up a little while ago.
Yeah, someone's been translating more of it as it goes along.
Kamen Rider Spirits is done. Shin Kamen Rider Spirits, I think, is, like, on the way. I haven't checked recently.
But Kamen Rider Spirits is fucking excellent. It's like a modern retelling of Kamen Rider Zekrom's origin story and the special attached to it. Only it goes butt-fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's a love letter to all your favorite Showa series, and the art is fucking amazing.
It's so good. And my favorite part still... And it happens again in Shin Spirits, at least for Rider 1 and Rider 2, is the beginning of Kamen Rider Spirits is broken into nine stories that have all nine riders starring in a story that happens after the end of their series.
Yeah.
And each of them is fucking amazing and makes you love those characters. And in Shin Kamen Rider Spirits, you get to see the origin of how Ichimonji became Kamen Rider.
Oh.
Because that's never actually shown in the series, it's only mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's real fucking good.
I didn't read Shin Spirits. I read a fair chunk of the original Spirits, and then I stopped when I found out it wasn't fully translated yet.
You get to the part where the Spirits show up. Like, the team of, like, regular people...
Mm.
And it becomes completely fucking unreadable. Like, the word bubbles have whiteout over them.
Oh no, it's that kind of, yeah.
And they have, like, it's like Duwang.
Now I gotta
JoJo
read it.
Part 4.
Yeah.
Except not funny at all.
Aww.
It's just painful. Thankfully, it's been translated better since
that
then.
That makes me get a feeling so complicated.
Oh
when
my
you say
god!
That.
He just memed on the show. Everyone, did everyone hear that?
It's a doing.
Did everyone
it
hear
relevant.
Liam meme?
It was relevant.
Fuck,
I'm
you are
sorry.
So off the show.
How many strikes is that? 16.
That's
now,
like 35. We're
35?
Not. Thankfully, we're using Death Galeon rules.
How many Ganmisers are coming?
Ganmiser rules. Fucking, yeah, Spirits is amazing. We've both read it, and we highly recommend it to everybody who likes Kamen Rider. Even if you've never seen a Showa series, it explains everything to you perfectly. You don't need to have seen the series before. Like, I've still never seen Sky Rider, and his part is amazing.
Yeah, it endears you to all the characters pretty well.
And, that's all the emails we got this time.
Okay, yeah, I think that's it for the podcast, then.
That is all we have to say this week. Join us next week where we'll talk about the same shit, but with one higher number for each.
Oh, boy.
We have a Twitter, at Ryder Club Radio.
And we have an email. That's RyderClubRadio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. Send us a tweet. Send us a Gmail.
Like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
Follow us on Tumblr.
Send Kamen Rider toys to our P.O. Box.
P.O. Box 137283 Fake Street.
Tokyo Land, Japan.
Follow us on Tinder.
Send us a recommendation to Toei so we can work there as writers.
Swipe the good direction. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.